Atkins versus Barnhart, 061476. Mr. Mulvaney.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Patrick Mulvaney. I represent Alan Atkins in his appeal from the judgment of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Indiana, affirming the decision of the Social Security Administration that he's not entitled to receive Social Security disability benefits. We believe the decision must be, agency decision must be reversed for four reasons. First, he did not receive fair consideration of his claim. Second, the judge's, ALJ's step three listing decision is erroneous and not supported by substantial evidence. The judge made an erroneous determination of Atkins' credibility, and the judge failed to follow Social Security ruling 8262 in his step four decision that he could return to his previous job, and the step five decision that there were other jobs he could do was not supported by substantial evidence and was erroneous because it did not consider all of Atkins' impairments. We've counted six devices the ALJ used to deny him a fair consideration of his claim. First, the judge exaggerated the validity, weight given to the evidence supporting a denial decision and minimized the weight given to the evidence supporting a decision that the claimant was disabled. This evidence that he minimized was entitled to controlling weight because it was that from treating physician Dr. Carter and from examining psychologists Dr. Berry and Dr. Spencer. The judge violated the federal rules of evidence by, long after the hearing was over, dredging up some old legal analysis of the MMPI evaluation and on his own conducting psychological research to shore up the shaky testimony from his non-examining, non-treating psychological medical expert, which had been impeached rather thoroughly at the hearing. So apparently the judge felt then that he had to go out and find something else to support a denial decision. He violated the Rousey case and the regulation that say if a person is to be denied based on their failure to follow doctor's instructions, there must be evidence to show that if they complied with those instructions, that they'd be able to return to work. Now, the judge knew he couldn't say that Atkins' failure to stop smoking was the reason why he was disabled, because there was no evidence to indicate that if he did stop smoking, he would be able to return to work. So instead, the judge, over and over throughout the decision, I think 22 times, would indicate that Atkins was disabled because he smoked, because he was addicted to nicotine. And we think that his implied approach was just as reversible, much reversible error, as if he had done so explicitly in violation of Rousey and the regulation. He repeated his analysis of the facts three times to extend this decision to some roughly 30 pages over and over and over again. He would just essentially, I don't know why he kept saying it over again. It's strange, but it would seem that he knew that sometimes reviewing judges, courts, look at the length of the judge's decision, and if it's a long decision, they think he actually did some analysis in the case. Whereas if it's just a skinny little few-page decision, it doesn't look like he did very much thinking about the result. The judge falsely reported the evidence. He said that Dr. Carter, Atkins' treating primary care physician, did not say he was disabled, which is directly contrary to the evidence in the record, where Dr. Carter said he was permanently unable to work. We believe this is the deliberate false statement of the evidence. We note also that the judge would go to any lengths to support his own medical expert, Dr. Thomas. If Dr. Thomas failed to provide an evaluation of the claimant's functional capacity, it was okay with the judge because the judge just filled in all the blanks for him. Whereas if Dr. Spencer failed to make an Axis II diagnosis of mild mental retardation, he used that to discount and throw out all of Dr. Spencer's evaluations, multiple examinations, different types. We note that the Step 3 denial decision was wrong for several reasons and should be reversed. First of all, and I'll just reserve the rest for rebuttal, but he never mentioned listing 1205C, contrary to this court's rulings, and therefore denied this court a frame of reference under which it could evaluate the judge's decision. We believe this is a deliberate deception on the judge's part. We'll reserve the rest of our argument for rebuttal. Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Skidmore.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is David Skidmore, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. Addressing Mr. Mulvaney's last point first, it's true that the term listing 1205C does not appear in the ALJ's decision. But the issue here is not whether the ALJ mentioned the listing. The issue is whether the decision contains an adequate discussion of the impairment of mental retardation and whether the ALJ's findings about mental retardation are supported by substantial evidence. Dr. Thomas, the medical expert who appeared and testified at two supplemental hearings, testified that Mr. Atkins was not mentally retarded despite low IQ scores. Dr. Thomas observed that Mr. Atkins' low IQ scores were suspect and were explained by other factors, including the pattern of symptom exaggeration that was revealed during personality testing. Dr. Spencer, the psychologist who administered the IQ test, did not specifically diagnose mental retardation. Dr. Thomas found that this omission of a diagnosis was significant. According to Dr. Thomas, Dr. Spencer's purposeful omission of an Axis II diagnosis meant that the psychologist did not think that Mr. Atkins was mentally retarded. Mr. Atkins' demonstrated work history and life skills do not reveal deficits in adaptive functioning that would support a finding that he satisfied the criteria of the mental retardation listing. There is no evidence that Mr. Atkins had any vocational difficulties due to a cognitive impairment. He had a long history performing semi-skilled work activities as a truck driver, security guard, maintenance worker, and mechanic. Mr. Atkins never complained that he could not perform the intellectual requirements of his work, and there is no basis for finding that he is now incapable of performing the mental requirements of his past work or other unskilled work. There is also no evidence that Mr. Atkins had social deficits reflective of a mentally retarded individual. He was married. He testified that he socialized and visited his three sons that lived with his former wife. He attended church. He engaged in other routine daily activities with his wife. His testimony reveals relatively normal social activities. Ultimately, there is no basis for finding that Mr. Atkins met his burden of establishing a listing level mental retardation or any other listing level mental impairment. The mental retardation listing requires more than low IQ scores. It requires deficits in adaptive functioning. The commissioner's regulations are consistent with the medical literature on this point. The ALJ thoroughly discussed the possibility that Mr. Atkins might have a mental impairment and might be mentally retarded. In fact, contrary to Mr. Atkins' claims of unfair process, it was the ALJ who ordered a supplemental hearing and ordered personality testing and intelligence testing and sent Mr. Atkins out for two mental status evaluations after the initial hearing. The ALJ gave him all the process he was due and more. And based on the ALJ's overall conduct of the hearing, I don't think that Mr. Atkins can legitimately sustain his arguments about unfairness and deprivation of process. And in fact, in his brief, Mr. Atkins doesn't even cite the appropriate standard for determining whether a case should be remanded for prejudice or bias or fundamental unfairness. That argument, in the commissioner's view, is entirely without merit. The point, Mr. Mulvaney mentioned the Rousey in his argument this morning. He also mentioned it in his brief. We addressed that. The ALJ did not deny this claim because Mr. Atkins refused to quit smoking. He denied the claim because Mr. Atkins retained the ability to work, to perform light work activities, despite the limitations that were caused by his smoking, despite his pulmonary impairments and his early emphysema. So it's simply incorrect to suggest that the ALJ denied this this claim based on Rousey, denied this claim based on the fact that Mr. Atkins refused to stop smoking. With respect to Mr. Atkins' physical functioning, the ALJ relied on treating medical source statements from Mr. Atkins' pulmonary specialist and his thoracic surgeon, Dr. Zawadzki and Drs. Kolsch, both of whom indicated Mr. Atkins could return to work shortly after he underwent the chest surgery in 1999. The ALJ also relied on Dr. Taylor's assessment and the physical therapist who performed a physical capacity evaluation in 2000, which indicated that Mr. Atkins could perform a range of light work activity. The state agency physicians reviewed the record and opined that Mr. Atkins could perform medium work. Dr. Farber, at the initial administrative hearing, looked at all of this evidence and concluded that Mr. Atkins could perform a range of light work. Mr. Atkins mentions the opinion by Dr. Carter. Dr. Carter's opinion was elicited after the first hearing. Dr. Carter did indicate that Mr. Atkins, quote, was permanently unable to work. However, this opinion was anomalous. The ALJ found this opinion was at odds with other substantial evidence in the record. The opinion was at odds with other treating source statements, including the statements of the treating pulmonary specialists, and it was not entitled to significant weight. The ALJ's discussion of Dr. Carter's opinion was minimal, but under these circumstances, it does not provide a basis for remanding this case. Mr. Atkins has raised a number of other issues here today and in his brief. The commissioner addressed those arguments in her brief. Absent any further questions from the court, I thank the court and request that you affirm the commissioner's decision finding that Mr. Atkins was not disabled. Thank you.
Counsel. How much time? Mr. Mulvaney?
The government argues that the Step 3 decision, the issue is not whether the ALJ mentioned the listing. Well, in three cases cited by this, by my brief from this court, you've ruled that the ALJ must cite the listing and must thoroughly discuss the evidence regarding that listing. If the ALJ doesn't cite the listing, you don't know whether the evidence meets the listing or not. The government's brief relies on the case of the Rice case, stating that Rice says the ALJ doesn't have to mention the listing. But Rice never reached that issue because Rice upheld the agency because the claimant's attorney failed to include in his brief the ALJ decision. Judge Rovner said that's why she voted for affirmance, and that if it were considered on the merits, she would have reversed the ALJ decision for multiple errors. The government argues about Dr. Thomas's speculation about Dr. Spencer's evaluation, but Dr. Spencer's evaluation specifically involved testing of his IQ. Dr. Thomas comes along with some vague numerical rationale that throws out about a half a dozen psychological evaluations administered by Dr. Spencer over a two-day period. And she said, this is a valid evaluation. These are valid findings. Dr. Spencer and Dr. Berry, the two psychologists, were appointed by the agency to evaluate him. These are not the claimant's psychologists. So they came in as neutral evaluators and formed examinations that showed he was totally disabled. This court in its Gujo case states the ALJ is not free to disregard examination evidence in favor of some opinion from a non-examining, non-treating physician or psychologist. The Rousey issue, maybe the ALJ did want to consider his smoking, but the ALJ considered it 22 times. Now, why would he go to such a lengths about the man's nicotine addiction?
He's against smoking. Probably a reformed drunk himself. You know what I mean?
Maybe he is against smoking, but his personal biases have no consideration in a decision.
He just mentions it in passing.
Well, he mentions it almost every page.
In passing.
And we're not supposed to take from that anything other than the fact that he wants to note that the man smokes. Well, I think that his 22 mentions of nicotine, his ignoring 19 elements of evidence. The government says, well, Dr. Carter's determination that he was totally disabled is inconsistent with the other evidence in the case, but the judge ignored 19 items of physical, medical evidence, objective, MRIs, CAT scans, which supported Dr. Carter's determination. Just briefly, the credibility determination is flatly contrary to Social Security ruling 96-7P. His step 4 determination is erroneous under Social Security ruling 8262 because he did not make a valid residual functional capacity assessment, did not consider the specific mental and physical demands of the prior jobs, and therefore did not compare his RFC with the demands of the former work. His step 5 decision involved an invalid RFC and an incomplete hypothetical question to the vocational expert. For all these reasons, we ask that you reverse the agency, remand the case, and suggest that it be assigned to a different judge. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Mulvaney. Counsel, we will take the case under advisement, and the court will stand in recess till tomorrow morning at 9:30.